This is your life, episode 80. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about five reasons you should speak well of your spouse, particularly in public. Now look, I know this is a business podcast, at least most of the time, but occasionally I like to talk about subjects that have a profound business impact, and this is one of them. How you speak about your spouse matters, not just in your personal life, but in your business life. And in this episode, I'll prove it to you. And you can find the outline, the resource links, and a complete transcript in the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/80, as in episode 80. I'll be back in a minute with my thoughts on this topic.
If you have something to say or sell in today's noisy world,
now you can get the inspiration, training, and tools you need to increase your influence and impact.
Platform University, a community of like-minded individuals led by one of Forbes magazine's top 50 social media influencers, Michael Hyatt.
Each month, you'll get access to
The Masterclass, where Michael interviews leading platform authorities.
Backstage Pass, a behind-the-scenes look at Michael's own platform business.
Member Makeover, with specific recommendations you can put to work now.
A live Q&A session where you can ask Michael your most burning questions.
And the discussion forum where our members support one another in their common quest.
Hi, this is Ryan Jenkins from ryan-jenkins.com. Participating in the member makeover of Platform University has been a true catalyst in taking my business and platform to a whole new level.
Intrigued? Now it is the time to invest in building your own platform. PlatformUniversity.com.
You know, as a leader, the health of your marriage directly affects the impact of your leadership. I've witnessed this time and time again. You probably have too. But being effective at work or in ministry begins by being effective at home. Early in our marriage, Gail and I attended a church led by a very dynamic 30-something pastor, and he was an extraordinary communicator. He was a wise and empathetic counselor. He seemed to have it all going on, and as a result, the church grew really rapidly. But as we got better acquainted with him and with his wife, we started noticing a disturbing trend in the way they related to one another. And we didn't pick up on it at first, but after a period of time, we noticed this pattern. They would often make these disparaging remarks about the other in public. And at first, it kind of seemed cute, like they were poking fun at one another. But their comments, while playful and humorous, and everyone laughed, over time, they became more and more pointed. And I think thinly masking their frustration and anger and unresolved issues with one another. Well, we ultimately left that church, but several years later, we learned that they had suffered an ugly divorce, both admitting, sadly, to multiple affairs. They lost their family. Of course, they lost their ministry. And to this day, I feel sad when I think about it because the impact was so big. Their personal lives, how they spoke about one another, how they related to one another, really had an impact on their organization. And I know it's easy to think, well, that wasn't the issue, them speaking poorly about one another. It was a symptom of something much deeper. Absolutely. But sometimes when we correct the things that we can see, it starts having an impact on our inner life. And I want to talk about that as we go through this session today. But conversely, different from that experience, I noticed that Sam Moore, who was my predecessor as the CEO of Thomas Nelson, always spoke highly of his wife. He would often say things like this, and I love this. He said, "I hate to leave her in the morning, and I can't wait to see her in the evening." Well, they've been married now for 60 years, 60 plus years. And last time Gail and I were with them, they were holding hands. It was awesome. But it was obvious that they're still in love. And reflecting on these two experiences, I'm convinced that praising your spouse in public is one of the most important investments you can make in your family, in your spouse particularly, but in your leadership and in your organization. And I think it's important for at least five reasons. Number one, you get more of what you affirm. I mean, haven't you noticed this in your business and your personal life? But have you ever noticed that when someone praises you, you want to repeat the behavior that caused it, right? I mean, it's just natural. This is just human nature. Now, it can be a form of manipulation if it isn't genuine, but it can also be a powerful way to motivate other people when it's authentic. And so you get more of what you affirm. So just to notice things and to affirm those, call them out, acknowledge your spouse is huge in terms of reinforcing the behavior and getting more of what you like. By the way, this works in the opposite too. You're going to get more of what you complain about or what you notice that's negative. It's going to reinforce it as well. And by the way, this works not only with your spouse, it works for your children, it works with your staff, it works with your colleagues. You know, it just pays to be positive. So number one, you get more of what you affirm. Reason number two, affirmation shifts your attitude towards your spouse. You know, words are powerful tools. They can create or they can destroy. They can build up or they can tear down. And I believe that most people have this inner drive to align their actions and their attitudes with their words. This is just how God made us. If you start speaking well of someone, you start believing what you say. The shift happens not only in them, but the shift begins to happen in you. I mean, we have a choice in life as we go through it. We can notice the positive or we can notice the negative. You can watch the news and soak your brain in negativity and all the bad stuff that's happening in the world because that's, you know, let's be honest, that's what typically is drives viewership in the news media. And so they focus on the dramatic and the negative news. It just sells better than the positive news. But if you steep your brain in that, and you really saturate your thinking in that, you're going to think the world's going to pot. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's largely a matter of perspective. I'm not talking about sticking your head in the sand and becoming, you know, a Pollyanna, although that, frankly, most of us could shift in that direction with positive results. But I am talking about focusing on the positive, not just because of what it does to the other person, but what it does to us. It makes us more enjoyable to be around, more positive to be around, and we start believing what we say as well. Reason number three, affirmation helps strengthen your spouse's best qualities. You know, encouragement is one of the most powerful tools that we have in our bag as leaders for helping other people become what God intended them to be. All of us need positive reinforcement, especially when we're trying to create or acquire a new habit, when we're losing weight, you know, when people notice that, it gives us the strength to stick with the program. But it's true in every area of life. If you affirm other people, it strengthens those qualities. It helps them in becoming what they want to be. And, you know, there's sometimes when you're out there slugging it out, trying to get a new habit, trying to reach a goal, you think nobody notices, and it's really easy to throw in the towel and just want to give up. But again, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, if we encourage one another and use that as a leadership tool in the development of the people that we're leading, and particularly in the building up of our spouse so that they can become all they were created to be, it's a powerful force, helping them strengthen their best qualities. Reason number four, and this is serious, but affirmation wards off the temptation of adultery. You know, when others see that you're happily married, when you talk about your spouse in a positive way, they're less likely to proposition you. All of a sudden, you've taken yourself off the market. It's clear that you're not discontent or trolling, looking for another partner or another fling or some kind of romantic entanglement. And so I've made it my practice ever since Gail and I got married to just talk about Gail in a positive way. And it shuts down a lot of conversations. It makes it clear. It establishes boundaries. It makes it clear that my heart is hers. And I'm absolutely, utterly committed to her. And it's kind of like a hedge that protects your marriage from would-be predators. And this can happen for women. It can happen for men. But you simply stop being a target when you speak publicly and positively about your spouse. And I think that if you're in a situation, you know, I can remember not too long ago when I was sitting on a plane and the woman behind me, or excuse me, next to me, had had a little bit too much to drink. And she got a little bit flirty for about 30 seconds. And she asked me what I do. And it was obvious that she was trying to initiate a conversation. She probably had no idea where it was going. I was kind of clear where it was going. And I just started talking about Gail and about the girls. And I pulled out my iPhone and started showing some pictures of my family. Well, that shut it down pretty much. I mean, that turned it in another direction that was very positive. And it just kept me from getting in a compromising position and let her know what my priorities and my values were. And it's a very good thing. So affirmation wards off the temptation of adultery. Talk about your spouse publicly. Talk about them positively. It's like adultery repellent. Reason number five, affirmation provides a model to those you lead. You know, to be really an effective leader, you got to lead yourself. You know, I've said this over and over again. It's not an original thought with me, but it's nonetheless true. If you can't lead yourself, you don't have the right to try to lead anyone else. And if you can lead yourself, then you can lead your family. And your marriage, and this is important, your marriage is a powerful visual of how you treat the people you value the most. And when you speak highly of your spouse, the people you lead, the people in your organization, are much more likely to trust you. It takes your leadership to another level. If, on the other hand, they hear you complaining about your spouse, guess what they begin to wonder? I wonder if he complains about me, or I wonder if she complains about me when I'm not present. You know, that's how they treat the people that are the closest to them, and I don't want any part of it. So they're tempted to withhold something, not really bring their best effort, and be as productive as they can. On the other hand, if people see you speaking positively of your spouse, speaking positively of your children, and again, I'm not talking about making stuff up or having some sort of fake positivity towards them, but if it's really genuine, if it's authentic, if it's heartfelt, if it's specific, things that you notice and like, and you can find that in almost anybody, if there are things that are specific and positive that you like, it reinforces your leadership and creates the right kind of culture and the right kind of climate for your leadership. So these are just five reasons why speaking well of your spouse in public matters. And for that matter, in private, when you're talking, just happen to mention your wife in passing, whether it's blogging or podcasting or in a meeting or at a conference or in any context, this is a huge help. It's an investment that pays big leadership dividends. And in a world where few and fewer marriages last, it really can be a difference maker. It can distinguish your leadership. So here's the question I have for you in this podcast. How have you seen this play out in the lives of those who have led you? Leave your answer at michaelhyatt.com/80, as in episode 80.
Thinking of starting your own blog but worried that your technical know-how is not up to scratch?
The good news is that starting blogging has never been easier.
Michael shares his knowledge with you free and will show you that 20 minutes is all it takes to have your own blog up and running.
Hi, this is Trevor Torres from DiabetesEvangelist.com. Man, your screencast just took all the stress out of setting up my website. Thanks so much.
Join Michael and follow his quick and easy step-by-step video tutorial at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress Setup at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress Setup.
Take action now and start blogging today.
Well, now for the next few minutes, let's turn to our listener Q&A segment. So this week, I'm going to do something a little bit different. Typically, if this is your first time to listen to my podcast, I take voicemail messages or questions from my listeners that they've left on voicemail. But today, I'm going to answer written questions that my readers and listeners have submitted. We get tons of these each week, and we try to answer them best we can, but it's challenging because there are so many. And I want to make sure that I address some of them, particularly as they relate to this topic. We've gone through the various questions that we've gotten over the last couple of months, and we pulled out the ones that relate to this topic, and so I want to answer them here. And by the way, the first question is not a question, but it's a comment from my wife, Gail. She wrote something that she wanted me to share with you. She sent this as an email to me. And here's what she says, and I'm reading Quote, Michael speaking well of me has been something that has grown over the course of our 35-year marriage. It wasn't necessarily intentional in the beginning and wasn't always the case. But over time, as he realized the unintended and powerful consequences, he became more intentional about it. In the beginning, he just tried to be a good learner of others, both by their good and bad examples. I have to say how wonderful it is to be married to someone who is intentional about speaking well of you. I feel loved. I feel honored. I feel challenged to live up to his view of me. I feel motivated to focus on his best qualities and put words to them. I feel safe. And then she has in parentheses, this is what Emerson Eggerichs calls the reward cycle in his great book, Love and Respect. Then she continues, Michael travels a lot, and he always has. In the beginning, there were opportunities for him to slip into unhealthy extramarital relationships or encounters. However, thankfully, he never took the bait. But there was always that fear in me that one day he would not say no. She continues, a woman's need for security is huge, at least it is for me. I can't tell you what it means for me to know that when Michael travels by land or sea or air, or when he travels in cyberspace, I don't have to fear. I know he loves me and is committed to me. And so does, she has this in all caps, and so does everyone else. This is huge. She continues, one last comment. Michael and I don't have a perfect marriage, and we never will. We've had very rocky times and been in counseling several times, but we are committed. We're committed to believing the best about each other's heart and working through the problems and fixing what needs to be fixed. Speaking well of each other publicly is one of the things we've learned to do. The payoff is huge. You can do it too. Well, thanks, honey. That's awesome. You know, I can't tell you how much that means to me to have my wife give me that kind of feedback. That also, by the way, her speaking well of me by virtue of this email really makes me rededicated to this whole concept of speaking well with her. And it is, as Emerson talks about, the reward cycle. You know, it's you can get in this upward cycle in your marriage where you reinforce the positive and the marriage becomes stronger and more rewarding and more satisfying over time. Okay, so let's go to this question. Erica wrote, my husband and I are struggling. I think we need professional help, but this is just such a negative connotation for him, like we're admitting defeat. How can I convince my husband to go with me to a marriage therapist? Erica, I never forget one of the first times that I went in for therapy, the therapist congratulated me and he said, look, I want to tell you something. The healthy people get help. The unhealthy people don't get help and get worse. And he just reaffirmed my commitment to use outside resources to improve my life and to get better in my marriage. And I would say the same thing. You know, why go through months and months and sometimes years, maybe even decades of being in a miserable relationship only to find out later that if you had just had the tools, if you just had the education, if you'd been equipped, you could have navigated some of these difficult things. And every relationship is going to have challenges. Gail and I are complete opposites on almost any test that you want to take. But, you know, that was the thing that made us attracted us to one another. It's also the thing that's made us want to kill one another at times. But we got the tools, and we've gotten the tools as we've needed them over time by just deciding that we're going to get the resources. You know, we don't have to figure this all out on our own. My attitude towards almost anything I do in life is that somebody has figured this out somewhere, has documented it, and can teach us and tell us how to do it. You know, if you're going to go climb Mount Everest, you know, few of us would attempt that on our own. Most of us would hire a guide because there's too much at stake. You know, who wants to get killed on the mountain? No one. Well, the same thing is true in marriage. The same thing is true in finance. The same thing is true with your physical life. Why not get outside help so that you can realize the rewards of a healthy, great marriage sooner? And so, Erica, I just guess I would try to get aligned with your husband around the outcome. And it's really easy to settle in this and just say, look, we're just opposites. This is as good as it's going to get. I want to say, no, that is not as good as it's going to get. It can get way better. In fact, the more opposite you are, the better it can ultimately be because you're bringing more pieces of the puzzle to the marriage. You're bringing more colors in the palette to make a beautiful painting. You know, I mean, the metaphors are endless, but this can be a great strength. But you've got to first stand for a great marriage and get aligned around that and just say, look, we don't know how to make this happen. We don't know what it's going to take. We'd like to believe it's possible, but we're going to get some outside help and try to learn the things, the skills that we need to know. I mean, face it, you don't usually get this from your parents. You certainly don't get it in school. Hopefully you get a little bit of it in church, but where are you going to get this training to become a better husband or a better wife or a better partner in this lifelong commitment? The next question comes from John, and he said, I'm afraid my wife and I are locked into this vicious cycle where we make fun of one another in public. To outsiders, it probably seems harmless, but honestly, it embarrasses me and makes me resentful. How can we stop this cycle and get back on track? And this is where I would again like to recommend Emerson Eggerich's outstanding book, Love and Respect. It's a tremendous book that identifies what he calls the crazy cycle, which is what you're experiencing, John, where you just spiral down and down and down with the negative reinforcement. What it really takes is at least one party to say, you know, enough of this craziness, I'm going to break the cycle. You know, I'm not going to be a willing partner in terms of destroying our marriage. I'm not going to return evil for evil. I'm going to speak well of my spouse. I'll tell you an example that happened yesterday. I should know better than this, but occasionally I fall into the trap myself. Yesterday, we got up. I'd had a difficult night's sleep. I didn't sleep well. I was irritable and grumpy. And I admit that. I didn't think I was at the time. I didn't really notice it. But Gail started talking to me about an issue. And I just said something really negative to her, hurtful, frankly insulting. And she was really tempted to react to me. And I could see it. In fact, she started to say something. And then she caught herself and she said, you know, I think I'm going to go out of the room right now. So she went into the bathroom and started getting ready for the day. And meanwhile, I sat there. Now, initially, you know, this happened for about 10 minutes. I felt like, look, what I said was justified. It was true. Whatever. You know, I'm feeding myself all this stuff, trying to avoid the pain of a guilty conscience. But eventually I came to my senses and I realized that what I said to her was negative. It was insulting. I should have never said it. And it was hurtful. And so, hat in hand, so to speak, I walked into the bathroom where she was drying her hair. And I said, honey, I need to talk to you. And I said, look, what I said was hurtful. It was unnecessary. It was insulting. And honestly, it was mean. And I am so sorry because I know that had to hurt. And I just want to ask, would you please forgive me? And with tears in her eyes, she said, of course, and gave me a hug. And thankfully, I mean, that's, by the way, you don't always get that outcome when you've got years of resentment built up. It takes more of a process, but we try to keep our accounts really clean. We try to not let the sun set on our wrath. And we always measure that, by the way, when we go to bed at night, if we can lay in bed, hold hands and pray. If there's something that inhibits that, we don't want to hold hands, we don't want to pray, you know, it might be a symptom or an indication that something else is in play and there's some issue, some relational issue that needs to be resolved. But because we've tended to that over the years, we could have an unfortunate, ugly situation like we had yesterday morning and get it resolved pretty quickly. But it did take a couple of things. It took her, first of all, for refusing to play. You know, she just didn't take the bait. She didn't react to me. She went into the other room where she could gain her composure and not be caught in that crazy cycle of reinforcing what I was doing that was negative. But she just let me stew on that for a while, and it was really good for me. And eventually, I came to my senses, and then I had to take the initiative. I had to go in and ask her forgiveness in order to restore the relationship. And if you do that a few times, if you do that hundreds of times over the course of your relationship, it creates intimacy, because intimacy is that thing that exists always on the other side of conflict. And so conflict can be hugely helpful because you have to resolve the relationship at a higher level than when you began before the conflict. You at least enter into a better level of understanding, a deeper appreciation for your spouse. So John, I hope that helps. Patricia asked, she said, my husband and I have been guilty of bashing one another in public. We had an honest talk about it and committed ourselves to change. That was several months ago. Now he has slipped back into the old patterns, and it hurts now more than ever. He says I'm just being, quote, too sensitive. How can I convince him to get back on the wagon without looking needy and weak? Well, Patricia, I think this is a case where you're going to have a frank conversation. And Gail has had these with me from time to time, where she sat me down, and I've done the same with her, sat her down and said, look, and here's how we always begin. I want you to know that I'm totally committed to you. I love you more than life itself. But I know that our relationship can only grow and flourish in an environment where it's safe to share with one another the truth. And I've got something I need to share with you, and I really need you to listen to me. Now, whenever Gail gets into that mode, I take it very seriously. Everything gets very quiet. I put my ears on, and I listen because I know she's about to lower the boom. And I don't mind that because I'm committed to the same outcome she is, which is a great marriage. You might have to go back to the very beginning with your husband, Patricia, and talk to him about, look, what is it that we want? What is it that we're trying to create in our relationship? Get really clear on the vision together, because that's what helps you to clarify the actions you need to take or not need to take in the present. Because everything you do is incrementally moving you towards one destination or another. It's either growing you together or it's growing you apart. Every action you take is moving you in one of those directions. And so you've got to ask your husband. You've got to have a very frank conversation about, you know, let's fast forward this. If you continue this, I'm going to increasingly shut down. We're going to reach a point in our relationship that's going to be a crisis, and it may not end well. It's not positive for us. It's not good for the kids. It's not good for the people that we're trying to influence, because again, to go back to what I shared in the main lesson, people take their cues from how you treat the most important people in your life. And if that's how you're going to treat me and I'm your partner, it doesn't speak well of you to the people you're trying to lead. So I would go back to the vision. Final question. Megan said, I've seen so many girlfriends use complaining about their husbands as a way to connect with each other. I don't believe it's healthy. What should I do when it happens and I am present? I always feel awkward, but I'm not sure what to say. Well, there's a couple things you can do, and I don't say this in jest. I mean it sincerely. You might need new friends. You know, if those are the kinds of friends that you're going to have, those are probably not the kind of friends that are going to influence you for good, because bad company does, as the Bible said, corrupt good morals. So you've got to be careful about this and surround yourself with people that are going to reinforce the kinds of behaviors, the kind of attitudes, the kind of person that you're trying to become. But it may be just that people slip into it and they're good friends and they're, you know, people that otherwise are positive, but they've slipped into this habit, sort of a group habit, a cultural habit of doing this. And it might be just worth having a conversation. I wouldn't do it probably at the time that it happens, but I would do it before it happens so nobody feels personally reproved or embarrassed. But just to say, you know, to begin maybe before any of that's happened, in a clean session, to just say, hey, look, guys, I've noticed something that we do when we get together, and I've been as guilty as anybody else, but here's the effect that it has on me, and I just noticed this about myself, and I'm not trying to judge anybody. It's just that I'm trying to become a certain kind of person, and I want my relationship to become a certain way, and maybe share this podcast with them, but talk to them about the higher vision of creating a great marriage and reinforcing one another to become great wives or great husbands if you're in a men's group. But, you know, groups can be a powerful force of encouragement. They can be a tremendous source of accountability as well. But you got to be intentional. You know, this is not kind of the natural state that we drift toward these things unless we articulate a positive destination, get everybody aligned about going there, and then hold one another accountable. It can be a great thing. But I think it does often require a conversation. And as a leader, you know, this is unfortunately what we have to do. We have to take the initiative and lead by talking about the difficult things. Well, that's all the time we have for questions this week. I'll be back after the break with the tip of the week.
The idea of writing and publishing the book can be very overwhelming.
It is hard to know where to start and what is the right thing to do.
The good news is that trusted and reliable help is available for you. Get Published from Michael Hyatt will give you instant access to Michael's 3 decades of knowledge as a publisher, literary agent, and author. This 21-part audio series will tell you how to publish your work and become a successful and thriving author. Michael is confident that Get Published will help your message get noticed in a noisy world. So take action now
and give yourself the very best chance to become a best-selling author.
MichaelHyatt.com/getpublished.
All right, well, let me leave you with one final tip, and it's related to the topic for today, and that is to ask your spouse to listen to this podcast and then schedule some time to discuss it. You know, I'd recommend that you do it over a meal. It could be at home. It could be at a cheap restaurant. It could be at a nice restaurant. But take time to discuss it, and you want to decide together if you're going to speak well of one another in public and in private. And I would really recommend that you don't try to stop a bad habit. That rarely works. Rather, I would cultivate a good habit, like noticing something good about your spouse. And maybe use one of those fancy habit tracker applications like I Run, You Run, or Lyft, which is a great one. I'm going to be talking about these soon in a blog post that I'm writing. But, you know, just keep account of trying to say something intentionally and positively about your spouse to them and to other people at least once a day. Maybe it's the way they look. Maybe it's something they've said. Maybe it's something they have done. Acknowledge them. Praise them. Thank them. And if you don't know what else to do, start by being grateful and expressing it. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love. And tweeting a link to the show, that would be hugely helpful in keeping the show visible so that people can discover it in iTunes and we can get the word out. Thanks also to Leviatops and to Ed Moe for leaving a review on the iTunes page for my podcast and just talking about how much they enjoy the show. That also helps immeasurably. If you'd like to do that, leave a review of the site or rate it, which I would really be grateful if you do that as well. Go to michaelhyatt.com/iTunes. And that will pop you right over to the page you need to rate the podcast and to give a review. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.